halfway through the 8 o'clock hour. One of my favorite cover songs ever, a cover of Neil Young's Needle from Jewel, of course. So we ate 8:30 on a Thursday, and as we do each and every Thursday, we are grateful to be speaking with our mayor, Sue Kemp, on the line, calling us long distance today. Good morning, Mayor. How are you?
Good morning, Ed. Yeah, I'm in actually Fripp Island, South Carolina this week with my family. Very and cool. It's near Savannah. It's right on the coast. It's the low country. So okay. It's the very low country here. So it's been nice, and it's warm here, very pleasant, nice to be with my family. I don't see them very often, so it's just been wonderful.
What a great feeling to see family that you hadn't seen in a while, and then all of a sudden, boom, it's like, wow, it's like as if we'd never been apart.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I have a great family. I'm blessed that way, and anytime I can see them and spend time with them, it's just wonderful for me.
Right. I know you've been listening to the show since you've been out of town. I know you've been checking out what we're doing here.
I have, and I listened to your debate with Diane Harkey and Katrina Foley. It was really, really good, Ed, by the way. I just want to throw you a compliment. It was very well done. And, yeah, and I thought the topics that you brought up were very, you know, germane to the situation we find ourselves in Orange County and a bunch of different topics. So I thought it was just very, very well done. And I thought, you know, Katrina was very well informed. You know, she even said she read our fire mitigation, fire safety plan that Bob and I worked on in 2019. A lot of cities have taken it and adopted it, have read it. And, you know, she actually took the time to read it. I talked to somebody on her staff yesterday about another topic and said, oh yeah, she read it. She was so impressed with it. So, you know, maybe the county can take it and, you know, reconstitute it a bit for their purposes.
Right. Yeah, I got the feeling after having them both in here, Katrina Foley was the girl all through school that just did her homework.
she's a worker. And, you know, when she was, on the city council and mayor of Costa Mesa, she's a doer. You know, I think she looks at what the important issues are and addresses them. She's not a chest beater type. She's not, you know, trying to blow her own horn all the time. She's just a worker. She gets down and gets the work done. And that's what you really want of an elected official.
Right, right. And well, thank you again for the nice words, the kind words about that. And we're going to be doing that more with other people running for elected office throughout the next few weeks. So thank you again for that. That's really cool, Sue.
That's great. That's just great.
Thank you. One of the things that we did cover in that debate between the two of them was the fires that we've had. We most recently had one in Laguna Niguel. Of course, back in February, on February 24th, we had the Emerald Fire. Has the county yet given us a reason for our fire, the Emerald Fire?
No, they haven't. And I think their investigation has been completed, but we haven't gotten any information. So there's, I don't know, probably something to all that. So I guess we'll find out when we find out. I know it's kind of bothersome to people not knowing what the cause is, but usually when you don't get something right away, there's maybe more to the story. I mean, I don't know. We haven't been told anything at all, so I don't know anything. I'm not basically, you know, holding my cards close to my chest or anything. I don't know anything, but I think it's, you know, curious. We haven't heard anything yet.
Right. And much like the average citizen wouldn't get more information out of them by pressing them, can you or our city manager get more information by pressing them, or they're just, no, that's not going to happen?
Well, we have been pressing them, and we're not really getting anywhere yet. Okay. We'll get there eventually.
All right. Well, let me ask you a question on something that might take place. Let's because Laguna Niguel residents are suing Edison for causing their fire. And if, in fact, the county ever gives us a reason for our fire, and if it's Edison, would you consider us suing them as a city, suing Edison for costs and damages?
Well, you know, we'd have to talk to our city attorney about that. But the way I feel about this, you know, these utilities, you know, PG&E has a horrible problem in Northern California, and Edison is becoming, you know, is going to have the same problem. You know, they just need to start undergrounding their utilities. I don't understand at all why they want to bear the huge cost of fines and property loss when they could plunk some money into undergrounding, particularly in these high-risk areas. It just doesn't make any sense to me. I know Bob Whalen's been working on this for a good portion of the time that he's been on the council. I think he and then State Senator Morlock were working on, you know, some legislation to get even some cost sharing with cities and the utility companies to underground. And I think then Governor Brown vetoed it. I don't know what the reason for that was. It got through a couple committees, and, you know, it was good legislation. But The CPUC, just, you know, everybody needs to wake up. This is not, you know, we're going to live in a world of high fire risk, and we need to do everything we can to mitigate our risk. And, you know, City of Laguna Beach, we're doing a lot. We're doing a whole lot, and we're going to continue to do as much as we can within our control. But these, you know, the CPUC, the state, the legislatures, and utilities, they need to knuckle down. This is not acceptable.
Right. We take it as we're quite literally fighting for our lives and our property here, and it appears that they don't take it quite as seriously as we are.
Well, yeah, and, you know, they have, you know, thousands and thousands of miles of power lines. You know, not all these power lines are in high-risk areas, but the high-risk areas need focus. And, you know, I'm not the person that's going to ignore this, and I know Bob won't either. So it's, you know, I'm 100% fed up with the whole thing. I lived in Bluebird for a while, you know.
Right.
And, you know, we have, part of Bluebird has above ground power lines up there, and people up there are interested in, you know, putting their lines underground. So they're going to start. We were working on that before the pandemic started, and then we kind of took a pause because nobody could meet or anything. So hopefully they'll pick that up. But, you know, I noticed that Diane Harkey, you know, made a comment about that in the debate with Katrina, but she was kind of off base, that she doesn't realize, you know, the cost associated with undergrounding, particularly in hillside communities like ours, that she didn't really quite get it. So
right.
It's costly, but we need to do something. I mean, I'm not going to sit around either, by the way.
I know you don't. I know you won't, and I know you don't. Hey, coming up this coming Tuesday night, there's a budget workshop before the next meeting, before the council meeting, and you're going to be considering an updated fee schedule for community development fees, which are proposed to be significantly increased. So I think the question is, what does a fair increase look like to you?
Well, you know, we looked at this before at the council several months ago, and the reason we did the fee study is, you know, and we haven't raised our fees for quite some time. And the reason we did the fee studies is to see, you know, if we're in line with other cities, or, you know, we need, or if we're, you know, we're, you know, kind of on par with other cities. That's one thing. And the other thing is, we have, you know, as a consequence of COVID, people staying home, and then, you know, the real estate market being getting kind of hot. There's a lot of work being done in the community on, you know, remodeling homes and doing substantial work on homes. And, you know, when you do that, of course, you have to come to the city for permits, and you get your plans in there and all the things that the city requires you to do. So we've had a huge spike in requests at the city to do work, and it has to be processed. And our revenues, of course, are up a little bit because of that. But what's happening now is, we have a good design review board now. I think the design review board functions very well, and I think I haven't gotten one complaint with this design review board since, you know, I've been on since we've got the new design review board seated a few years ago. But still, what's happening is we have a backlog, particularly in the building department. So we'd like to get hire some people in there to get, you know, better processing, you know, through community development. We've done a lot of work in community development. Mark Weiner's done a great job kind of upgrading our systems, and there's integration work you have to do between different systems, getting new permitting up, getting some training in, some different process changes. It's just a kind of a hairball that needs to be unraveled over time. But we're looking at that to see if the city can get some form of cost recovery for, you know, the resources that we have, you know, working in community development, so that we don't. Because what happens is, you know, the city staff is, you know, paid for out of our general fund. And it's, you know, we want to make sure we're giving good service. So it's kind of a balance between, you know, getting enough revenue to get the service levels up where we need and make sure that people are happy with the service that we provide. So that's kind of, you know, what we're looking at. And we'll look to see, you know, if, you know, where those increases should fall. And they're in a number of different categories in community development. We'll look to see that, you know, where we're kind of making sense and where we might be a little bit too high or too low. We want to be fair to the community. On the other hand, we want to be fair to the entire community too, because everybody's paying. So we're going to look at that, take a look at that, and see kind of, you know, what we need to do. The other thing on the budget, though, is we've kind of returned to, you know, pre-COVID levels in terms of our financial situation. during COVID, we didn't have to cut any services. A lot of cities had to cut services. We didn't cut any services. I think we canceled some rec department programs, right, like, you know, because they weren't really safe to do that during the pandemic. But we didn't have to have layoffs. We didn't have to cut services. So, you know, I'm very thankful that the way, you know, the city has operated during the pandemic, that we were able to, you know, keep our city running as best we can. And now we're kind of coming out of that, and we're in pretty decent shape. We're not going to have a lot of money sloshing around, but right, at least we're back to where we need to be.
Right. So the workshop, really, you're looking to find that sweet spot in the tightrope walk of too much, too little. There is a sweet spot, and you guys are looking to find that.
Right. We don't want to gouge people, though. Right. I'm not into gouging people, right, but, you know, sometimes we're going to have to charge a little bit more to make sure that we can have adequate staffing.
Right. You're not the oil companies.
No, we're not the oil companies. Nothing like the oil companies, right?
No. Hey, today is the last day to apply for a seat on the audit review board. Explain to our listeners how important the audit review board is and what kind of qualifications you'd be looking for to fill that seat.
Well, I can give you a little background first. So in 2016, we had Measure LL on the ballot and it passed. And as part of Measure LL, we said, okay, for 5 years, we'll have a citizens committee to make sure that the city in spending money complies with the LL ballot measure that was passed. And so we had a seven-member committee, kind of whittled it down to five over time because some people left, but you didn't really need seven. But we had five. And they were five-year terms, and they've expired now. And then sometime between, I don't think I was on the council when this happened, but sometime between 2016 and 2018, we added audit responsibilities. So what the whole thing to that committee, so what the whole thing looked like was, we every year we take a look at Measure LL and really what the funds were supposed to be used for public safety. So, you know, right, fire department, lifeguards, police department, that kind of thing. We look at the spending and make sure it's in line with the ballot measure. And then the Measure LL and Audit Committee would kind of look into the operations of each department and look to see, you know, what they're spending money on, what their challenges were. But we never had any, what I'd call, lack of compliance on Measure LL because, you know, the city's really good about spending money where we're allowed to and not spending money where we're not allowed to. So the compliance level was really high. So we decided, earlier in the year that we don't really need to do that portion anymore, but we want to continue with the audit portion. Now, the audit portion is every year the city has a financial audit. And what they do is they review what we call our consolidated annual financial report, the CAFR. And that's kind of the financial reporting mechanism that we use. And we have an outside audit firm, and they look at how we're performing against the requirements in the CAFR. And they take a close look at the CAFR and make sure that, you know, we're not making any big accounting mistakes, or we're not applying, you know, improper accounting rules or things like that.
Right.
So, and we also have very good audit results every year. We never have anything significant that you go like, oh my gosh, what are we doing here? They find little things here and there. I worked in the private sector for many years. Every year I had, you know, Ernst & Young or Deloitte or somebody came in and did audits, and they always find stuff that's their job. And then you go through and you have meetings with them, you review them, and then you make changes if you need to. So anyway, that's what we have. So we're just doing the audit portion now, and it's not very time consuming. I called a couple people that have applied. It's not very time consuming, but what you do is you meet with the auditors and you go over their findings. Then you meet with the finance department a couple of times and you go over their findings and what remediation efforts they might have to go through, if any. Then you put a report out to the council and review it. So that's what it looks like. We don't get enough good applicants. We extend the deadline. Ann Marie McKay, our city clerk, extended the deadline for us last week. So
okay.
If we don't get enough applicants, we could also just have a, you know, council subcommittee do the review work. Bob Whalen and I, or somebody else, could do it. I'm the liaison to the audit Measure LL committee, and I have been for, this is my fourth year now, I think, third or fourth year. So if that doesn't happen, we could just do it that way. But
all right,
it's not a problem. I'd like to have residents apply and and have a good committee, but we don't, you know, it's not super critical.
Okay. Well, thank you for the explanation on and detailing exactly what's involved. And I'll remind our listeners again that today is the last day to apply for a seat on the audit review board. Thank you.
That's right.
Before I let you go, I want to talk about the Moss Point staircase and lifeguard tower, which seemed like a no-brainer, but there are, you know, there's some, every once in a while, someone goes, oh, that's a permanent lifeguard tower. What the heck? But explain to us the balance between public safety, the environment, and scenic beauty, and this being one of those cases.
Well, as an elected official, you know, public safety is your number one responsibility. And, you know, the lifeguards, so first of all, I haven't looked at this issue because it was before the Planning Commission, and I kind of have I kind of self-regulate in terms of sticking my nose into this.
Right.
Comes to the count because I don't want to, you know, I don't think it's proper, to be honest with you.
Right.
But
you don't want to put your thumb on the scale is what you're saying.
No, I don't like doing that. I don't think it's not what a council member should be doing personally, my opinion. But anyway, so they, you know, the lifeguards, you know, they're sitting out in the sun all day, and we don't want to have beaches where we don't have lifeguards, because if you don't have lifeguards, particularly in these cove beaches, while, you know, Moss is pretty small, but when you don't have a lifeguard there, you're also subject to people coming down there and drinking and doing stuff they're not supposed to be doing that a lifeguard will prevent. They're just not there to, you know, pull people out of the water. When they see bad behavior, they see people doing things they shouldn't be doing, they tell them, you know. So, and then our beaches are tricky in terms, you know, as places to swim. People come inland and they don't know what they're doing, and they get in our water. And we pull, I don't even know how many people we pull out of the water. It's like 2,800 or something one year.
Wow.
And that doesn't even count the number of times the lifeguard will go out and say, like, hey, this isn't safe.
Right.
You know, that doesn't count in the numbers. So, you know, you always want to have safe beaches. And so we want to have lifeguards there. On the other hand, we don't want them getting fried, sitting in the sun all day. You know, the consequences of long-term, you know, sun exposure are bad. So anyway, we want to be responsible, try to do the right thing, protect the beaches, protect the residents around there, because you don't want to have a lot of shenanigans going on at the beaches.
Right. It's a good-looking tower, too, by the way.
Yeah. So we'll have to sort it out. The residents have filed an appeal down there. They don't want, you know, they don't want a tower down there. We'll have to see. We'll have it come before council. We'll take public comment, and we'll, you know, we'll talk about it as a council. We'll arrive at a good conclusion, hopefully.
Okay. All right. I want to say enjoy the rest of your vacation in South Carolina. Enjoy your family. And I love the fact that you know, you're on vacation and you chose to call into the program. I'm sure the residents and listeners appreciate that. Mayor Sue Kempf, as always, thank you so much. Have a safe travel back. When are you heading back, by the way?
So we're coming back on Saturday, and which is just perfect. Because we have council meeting next week, so I got to get back to work. You're on the council, you're never quite, you know, you're always having calls and checking right. Your emails and doing stuff like that. But it's been good to be away, but I'll be glad to get back.
And we'll be glad to have you back. Thank you once again for joining the program this morning, Mayor Kempf. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Ed. Good to be with you this morning.
Great to be with you as well. 8:50 the time. It's the Mornings with Ed Show.